Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
This is a republic if you can keep it. Political news and commentary with Mark Brewer and Jeff Timmer.
I'm Mark Brewer. Welcome to the Nap Time for Sleepy Don edition of a republic if you can keep it. This week, Attorney General Dana Nethel stuns Lansing with criminal indictments of former House Speaker Lee Chatfield and his wife. Democrats, as expected, win the two special elections to fill state House vacancies, restoring the Democrats the trifecta control of state government. Robert Kennedy Jr. files to run as the natural law party for president in Michigan. And sleepy Donald Trump's social media company stock matches his New York trial energy level, sinking fast.
I'm Jeff Timmer. In addition to Don Snorleone news coming out of New York, we have other national political news. Joe Biden continues to gain ground in national polling as he campaigns while Trump fumes and naps in court. The U.S. economy is, in the words of a Wall Street Journal headline, the envy of the world. But that's not registering, at least yet, with American voters. Crime in the U.S. is dropping, and that's not registering with voters yet either. We have to begin, though, with the story of the week in Michigan. And you know, it's hard to say, one of the stories of the year and certainly of the decade, a 13-count indictment of former House Speaker Lee Chatfield, the second former Republican speaker within the last year to be charged with criminal felony charges. Mark, tell us what's going on.
Well, like you said, Jeff, long awaited, long anticipated. 13 counts are principally against Chatfield and also against his wife, all focusing on essentially embezzlement from a couple of the nonprofits that he set up, but also embezzlement from the state house, where he wrongfully, illegally claimed got tens of thousands of dollars in travel reimbursements. So what would happen here was these nonprofits raised an enormous amount of money. Not surprising, given his stature as Speaker of the House, he can raise a lot of money. A lot of people expect a lot of favors from him. He puts it in there and then runs up lavish expenses all around the country. You know, trips to Disney World, lavish dinners, hotels, travel, a lot of times with his family or with his gang. And then he gets reimbursed under false pretenses from these nonprofits. There are other charges, Jeff, about writing checks from the nonprofits and his PACs to cronies on falsified invoices for services that goods that were never provided. They would cash those checks and then kick back the money Chatfield. So the cash would go into his coffers. There's also allegation in here about a very favorable rent deal he got. A lobbyist provided him a rental place in the Lansing area, and he turned around and subleased it. And apparently kept the profits from that as well. So it looks like every possible means of looting, and that's something I think you can say, Jeff, looting those nonprofits and the state house money, which they have sole control in the tradition of Michigan speakers. He completely controls the house budget. No questions are ever asked, but lived a very lavish lifestyle for a long time in complete violation of a number of laws. And I'm glad to see Nessel crack down.
Yeah, the financial crimes are numerous and astounding in their scope. The criminal conspiracy that he's been charged with being the ringleader in, what's been talked about for now nearly 2 years or maybe more than 2 years since the news first started to break the accusations against him. I think what's big news, too, though, is that there are no, and the Attorney General's office announced that there will not be charges related to the alleged sexual abuse that were lodged by his sister-in-law And I know that there have been reports in Bridge Magazine and elsewhere that she is unhappy, and I saw the quote, devastated by that fact. And so this was a long talked about, long watched case with financial crimes involving campaign money, social welfare organization money, and public money. And there was also the very lurid sex charges that are allegations that were made by the sister-in-law. And for whatever reason, I mean, I know, I'm sure the Attorney General's office looked with those very seriously, but couldn't proceed with a criminal indictment and be able to convict with in front of a jury with that. And so it's going to be interesting because they did leave open the door for additional charges. It sounds like related to the conspiracy and the misuse of monies that could yet be coming. I think this is, there's going to be a lot of time before this all starts to come into clear view through the lens, but this could be the start of a new push. I think it should be a new push for added transparency and prohibitions on use of money by public officials. This is the worst case scenario that our friend Bob LeBrant predicted decades ago when the former office holder expense funds were eliminated. He said, you're driving this money underground. It's going to lead to corruption. And boy, has it ever.
Yeah. Jeff, there's so many layers to this onion. I'd like to spend a few minutes with you. I'm peeling the onion, if I can continue the metaphor. So on the sex abuse front, as Donald Trump has learned to his chagrin, merely escaping criminal liability doesn't get you out of the woods, right? E. Jean Carroll and others have brought civil suits. And so we'll see if Rebecca Chatfield pursues that route. Now that to her disappointment, she was very publicly disappointed that there was nothing there. But none of this would have happened without her coming forward with those initial allegations about sexual abuse. But she still has other remedies, and it remains to be seen whether those are pursued. Yes, but Jeff, this whole aspect of the continuing investigation, I think is interesting. On each of these nonprofit boards sat individuals. Two of them were the Menards, his chief of staff and one of his top aides who worked for him in his entire legislative career. They have already been indicted for basically stealing money from those C4s in a variety of ways. But there are other individuals on those boards who, frankly, neglected their fiduciary duties and allowed this to happen. Those boards were supposed to be monitoring this and stop this kind of stuff, but they were clearly of doing whatever they were told to do by the Menards or by Chancellor Lori's people, allowed this to happen. So there may be some liability there. Maybe some of them are going to be witnesses. We'll have to see how that all plays out, because there are a lot of other players here that, you know, are not indicted beyond Chatfield and his wife this week. One aspect of this, Jeff, that I would like to talk about, you and I have known this has happened over the years. Lobbying firms in Lansing is one of the, quote, services they provide. They go to these elected officials, these legislators and others, and they offer to set up C4s and 527s for them. They say, we'll help you manage it. We'll put our people on the board. They'll be friendly. And then we'll give you the dark money, the soft money to fund them. It's become a cottage industry. And I think that's part of what's going on here. Same thing with a number of law firms, not just in Lansing, but elsewhere in the state. There are employees on the payroll who set these things up, sit on their boards, help funnel the money to them. So it's all part of, in my view, a very corrupt system that set up exactly what happens here. And it's made so easy and so tempting. Set these things up, gather the money, and then abuse it the way Chatfield did. I hope this sends a very clear signal that this is not going to be tolerated in the same way that Nestle's indictment a few weeks ago of the folks involved in Unlock Michigan, we hope, sends a signal that kind of phony use of C4s is not to be permitted. I'll get off my soapbox here, Jeff.
I think it's a good soapbox.
What's going on here?
No, it's a good soapbox. And we both have worked around Lansing for decades and have a lot of respect for people in the advocacy and lobbying community, whether it's for multi-client lobbyists or any of the associations. Most of the people in that profession are good people who do things the right way according to the letter of the law. But there's always this push in and around politics to figure out where's an area that we can try to step our toe over the line a little bit, expand the horizons and boundaries. That's not necessarily reflective of the entire industry. And I think any curtailing the kind of abuse and the lax practices that you cited there are something that a lot of folks in the lobbying community would applaud, because it is unsavory. It certainly, the appearance of impropriety is definitely there, and the spirit of the lobbying laws and disclosure are being assaulted by those kinds of arrangements.
Yeah, thank you, Jeff, for that point. I don't want to overstate this. Certainly there's a right to lobby, whether paid or volunteer, and I respect that. A conservative Fortin function providing information and advocacy. But if these abuses, when lobbying turns into bribery, frankly, that are troubling to all of us. And it gives lobbyists in their industry and the lawyers who are involved a bad name as well, a bad reputation that they don't need. And look, I have clients in C4s. There are legitimate uses in social welfare organizations and 527s, and I try to keep my clients on the right side of the line, and there are legitimate uses. But unfortunately, what we see now is shirking. Even former Speaker Johnson, there was a C4 involvement there in terms of how that bribe money moved to him. And of course, here now with Chatfield and perhaps with Mikoff, we all know Mikoff had a C4 that he kept after he left office, and others, that this kind of publicity and criminal conduct just really taints a vehicle which has appropriate uses. And so I hope to get out of the cycle of this here in Michigan, either because people start behaving better, or for whatever other reason, there may be criminal enforcement by Nathan Essel or prosecutors, that people get back on the right path here.
Yeah, well, and I think you mentioned Dana Nessel. I think she deserves a shout out for the perseverance with this. This was a lot of political minefields involved in this. It took a long time. There were a lot of people wondering why it was taking so long. Is there anything going to come of this? You can't, I guess, rush this. This is one of those instances where it's ready when it's ready. And in this case, Dana Nessel's team at the Attorney General's office appear to have done a painstaking, thorough investigation. I read the affidavit that was filed with the indictment detailing the scope of the crime and the 13 counts, or the crimes in the 13 counts. And it's with these white collar crimes that took place over a long period of time. There was a lot of forensic work that went into trying to figure out exactly what was happening and who was doing what when, who had knowledge and who didn't, and all that kind of business. And so it's become commonplace. So here's yet another public official, yet another Republican who's now under the stain of criminal indictment. We've become a little numb to that, but this is the kind of important thing in our government, that we hold people accountable, because the abuses, we've seen what happens with absolute power here. The old cliche, it seems to have corrupted, absolutely.
Yeah, a couple of additional points here, Jeff. Absolutely. I've had my differences with Dana Nessel on a variety of matters. But kudos to her for this. Same thing on Unlock Michigan. Madeline Brandt and I, who brought that complaint, wish she had done a little bit more in terms of going after Shirky. But it got pursued. And you're right, it does take time. I would urge our listeners, if you can find it online, to read the 19-page single-spaced affidavit that Jeff just referred to. It lays out in incredible detail this criminal enterprise. And by the way, Chief Nessel basically charges Chatfield and his wife with running a criminal enterprise and conspiracy. At the root, that was this embezzlement of this vast quantity of money that I talked about earlier. But there's a lot of related crimes, conspiracy, and like I said, a criminal enterprise. So yeah, kudos to her for pursuing this. You made a point there, and I'm sorry, now it's escaping from me. Again, I know. That was the point, too. Remember, during all this, Chatfield's successor, Speaker Whitworth, refused to investigate, right? And it turns out now, as many suspected, that Chatfield was looting the public treasury in the House. And that would have been uncovered had Whitworth not stonewalled the investigation. Now, his excuse was, there's a criminal investigation, I should wait. Well, maybe. But I hope there will be an investigation and some changing of the procedures in the House so that in the future, speakers of whatever party can't do what Chatfield did, only to be caught years later in a criminal case. It should not have taken this long. It should never have happened in the beginning.
Well, you mentioned Chatfield's successor, Speaker Jason Wentworth, and there are investigations swirling around him and appropriations and staff members of his and enriching themselves with public dollars. So stay tuned, because there might be yet another Republican speaker who we're talking about more, because there have been stories already reported about Jason Wentworth. And so this is, stay tuned, more to be determined.
Right.
Democrats restore their state government trifecta. That and more after these messages on A Republic If You Can Keep It.
Epic MRA is pleased to sponsor this podcast. Epic MRA is a Lansing-based market research and public opinion polling firm with nearly four decades of experience measuring public opinion about politics, ballot proposals, and public policy issues.
Our clients include media outlets, school districts, colleges and universities, all levels of state and local government, and membership organizations. For the November 2022 election, Epic MRA published the most accurate final pre-election poll among several state and national polling firms.
Our polls most closely predicted the actual election results in races for governor, secretary of state, and attorney general, as well as the three ballot proposals.
Epic MRA is clearly the go-to polling firm in Michigan. Visit www.epicmra.com to learn more.
Ben Franklin may have invented the Franklin stove to stay warm, but we go Ben one better.
We have the Ben Franklin hoodie, dedicated to Americans for Sanity.
But wait, there's more. Our merch store has coffee mugs for Democrats, uncrazy Republicans, and free-thinking independents, as well as t-shirts for the discerning democracy lover. Just click on the Merch Center link on our homepage, arepublicpodcast.com. Show your support for political sanity at the podcast merch store. It's your duty as an American.
So, early this afternoon, Robert Kennedy allegedly got himself on the ballot. Robert Kennedy Jr. got himself on the ballot by becoming the candidate of the Natural Law Party. There have been a lot of stories about how he's going to try to get on the ballot here. His super PAC was active here for a while, collecting signatures. They closed up shop. There have been sightings of volunteer petition gatherers, signature gatherers, ran around the state. But a mechanism that was always there, that is available to any other candidate, would be to try to get on the ballot and be in the five so-called minor parties that are allowed to have candidates on the Michigan ballot. So he allegedly filed the paperwork to do that today. We'll see if that's the end of the story. I think there's going to be a lot of questions asked about how did this come to be? Was this done with the right authority? What deals were cut to give him ballot access here in Michigan? So we'll see how this all plays out, Jeff.
Yeah, well, that will be interesting, because the minor parties have, they can nominate candidates for various offices, including the presidency. But there are statutory guidelines that they have to follow in doing so. So it is going to be curious. The timing is interesting, as there have been reports about Kennedy circulating petitions for a while in Michigan and paying a premium dollar to get signatures on those petitions, paying the petition circulator's premium dollar. And so it sounds like, for whatever reason, they abandoned that quest, either because it didn't make sense financially, they weren't getting anywhere, or they saw this existing party line on the ballot as a better option than as an independent, non-affiliated candidate.
Right. Those ballot lines are incredibly valuable if you think about them as an asset, right? And so for all of the problems of the Republican Party that we have chronicled and many others have chronicled over the last several years, that ballot line and the ability to put candidates on the ballot in Michigan is incredibly valuable. And I think a very tempting target for candidates like a Jill Stein, like a Robert Kennedy, like others. So who knows what deal was cut. I'm not here accusing anybody of anything, but that's a very valuable asset those minor parties have, and they work hard to keep it. And it can sometimes be to their benefit. So we'll just have to see how this all plays out. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of press interest in the Natural Law Party which has been talking about the minors of minor parties in this state. But now all of a sudden they got Robert Kennedy Jr. as their presidential candidate.
Let's turn back to some court proceedings. This week in New York, we saw the jury selection for the first of Donald Trump's criminal trials that's underway. This is the third day. They were in session on Monday and Tuesday. Yesterday, the court took a recess from the Trump trial to conduct other business, and that's going to be their schedule going forwards. And then Thursdays and Fridays will also be devoted to the Trump trial, and it's expected to last 5 or 6 weeks. It's very interesting to see Trump is continuing to prosecute his criminal trial in the judicial system in a public forum and getting a lot of pushback, at least from the prosecutors, on whether or not he's violated the gag order and is he corrupting the process. There was a prospective juror, who withdrew today because whatever information from her questionnaire that became published, her friends and family were able to identify that she was involved in the jury pool because of information that had been included in news stories about the occupation or whatnot of other jurors. And so given the high publicity, high profile nature of this case, that's one of the side effects of this, is getting a jury that can be seated and do their job without suffering political bullying or other tactics in the process.
Yeah, Jeff, I don't envy that judge at all. They're trying to run a fair trial. He's already warned Trump and his lawyer at least once about Trump apparently trying to intimidate a juror. Trump's falling asleep. We've got all these performative antics in the court. But this is basically, Jeff, you and I talked a little bit about on last week's podcast. This is part of Trump's overall effort to denigrate, attack, reduce the respect for the judicial system in this country to his benefit, right? Trying to demonstrate, oh, this is not fair. It's a rigged trial. I'm being tried for political reasons. All his way of running down the court system to his political benefit. But unfortunately, in the course of that, ruining the reputation and the integrity of one of the most important systems we have left, and frankly, one of the remaining walls we have left protecting democracy in this country. He's not yet corrupted the judiciary, but he is using this trial to do that. The attacks on the judges, the attacks on the prosecutors, and so forth and so forth. And that judge has really got his hands full. If this were any other defendant, I'm confident he'd be in jail for contempt. Not for violating the gag order, for his behavior in the court. And so his status as a former presidential candidate is already benefiting him. And it's very difficult to see here how we get the rule of law applied to everybody, no matter who they are. And that's what this country was based on, that everybody is equal before the law and they don't get special treatment.
Right. Well, and that's the irony of this entire thing, is Trump is out there talking about he's being singled out for persecution. This is a political persecution. This is being done by his opponents. The irony is he's being treated differently than any other defendant, better than any other defendant in the country when it comes to the latitude, the leeway, the outrageous shit that he's just allowed to get away with on day in, day out basis that would land any other criminal defendant behind bars. Criminal defendants do not have the same constitutional rights as you and I do. They, in order to, once they're indicted and they are released on bail or on whatever conditions for their release as they await trial, they subject themselves to certain conditions. And those conditions don't seem to apply to Trump. And this is a case, too, where I fault Trump because he is unleashed an unrelenting assault on the integrity of the courts and the process. He's daring them to fine him, to jail him, to hold him in contempt, to stop him. In the courts, in this case and the others, in not taking the measures that they would typically take with a defendant, letting Trump get away with this outrageous behavior, they're playing a part in undermining the process too. They're being careful not to incite things politically, but they're weakening the integrity of the judicial process if they treat him differently than others. And it's clear that they are. The argument that anybody who would try to argue that Trump isn't getting preferential treatment isn't a serious person.
Right. Well, Jeff, let's turn to something that, a little happier news, a part of our election system that still works. We have two special elections this weekend. People can help cheer the results or not as they see fit. But we had an election, and the elections work, and people got to cast their ballots, and the ballot got counted, and we're about to see two new state representatives to fill those two vacancies. So I was at least glad to see that aspect of the system work this week. But let's talk about it. So now the Democrats are back, 56 votes in the House, trifecta restored. What do you think is coming up on their agenda? Seems to me one of the first things got to be the budget. Right? When the governor's proposed the budget, there's been some budgetary committee meetings and we talk about it, but they got to get a budget in place because pretty soon the campaign season for the fall election is going to start. But beyond the budget, Jeff, do you have any sense, any thoughts, any ideas about what they should be addressing in the next few months?
Given that it's an election year, the history tells us that there is oftentimes less productivity from the legislature during election years. But oftentimes that's a result of divided control. Now that the Democrats have complete control, there's nothing stopping them, except their own internal disputes, perhaps, for running up the score when it comes to politically advantageous or just good public policy for Michigan. Now, I would say that a lot of the big issues they've taken on and done significant reforms with gun safety, with energy policy, they've done things when they had control before these vacancies happened last fall to really move the needle this legislative term. As to what's left, yes, they have to pass a budget. They're not going to go into the fall having not done that when they control both chambers and have Governor Whitmer sitting there. But I can also expect that there's going to be some move to take additional further look at some of the sunshine and transparency ethics. In addition to what they did last fall, that was billed by some. I know that the House Chair, Erin Burns, has been a guest on this podcast a couple of times, and she's indicated that she looked at the package that was passed last fall regarding financial disclosure, et cetera, that was required with the change to Michigan's Constitution as a starting point, not the end of the process. And I think that has been an attitude from the legislative players involved in this. And now with added outside things like the charges now that Nessel unveiled against Chatfield, that adds further impetus to take additional action to clean up many of these public corruption avenues that exist in Michigan right now.
Yeah, no, and the other obviously thing, John, this applies all across the board. They not only have the elections coming up and that restricts their time, but also they're keeping an eye on are there things that they could pass. It may actually continue to help them with their reelection. I know there are efforts to talk about changing, reforming our economic development approach in the state, access to affordable housing. I know the Attorney General, correctly so, is still pushing for some civil rights reforms. And there is a pending bill in the Senate to reform the Freedom of Information Act and extend it to the governor and to the legislature. And that's been something that's been talked about for decades, and maybe it will actually happen. I think that's something that the voters would look favorably upon if they were to act upon that. On the other hand, Jeff, it may well be a very busy lame duck.
Well, that's more likely. That's more likely.
I mean, if Dems lose control of the House, and even if they don't, there could be controversial bills people don't want to vote on before the election, vote on them in lame duck. They still take effect early next year. It doesn't make difference when they're approved here. They're still going to take effect next year and so forth. Whether the Dems hold the House or not, we could have a very busy lame duck with a lot of legislation passed there as well.
But Mark, in your day job as a leading election law attorney here in Michigan, no shortage of things that you're involved with. You've got a couple of complaints involving Macomb County Prosecutor Pete Lucido and a ballot question committee that are out there. Tell us a little bit about those.
Yeah, Pete Lucido is a walking robbery, whether it's sex harassment, race discrimination, campaign finance and ethics violations. He just seems to have no respect for the law, despite the fact that he's a prosecutor. So I've actually filed 3 complaints against him now, 2 under the Macomb County Ethics Ordinance, or basically using his office to stage campaign photos. They were subject to a hearing this week where Lucia tried to get him dismissed. The board refused. They're going to be investigated now. So he is under investigation by the Macomb County Ethics Board. I also filed a complaint with the Bureau of Elections about violation of the Campaign Finance Act by him. Now, I have an email, Jeff, from an intern in his office. He said, look, I hired Ion to be an intern here to learn about criminal justice. All I'm doing is campaign work. I quit. She put that in an email. And that's just some of the evidence that we filed against him. The other matter that you mentioned is, again, just so disappointing that people don't seem to learn from the Unlock Michigan case. Do we have a group that is opposed to some of the clean energy legislation, and they raised money secretly, at least $50,000 that we know of, and there may be more, through a C4, didn't disclose the donors, didn't form a ballot question committee, and then transferred it to a ballot question committee. That's exactly what Unlock Michigan case said you cannot do. So I filed a complaint against them. It's just amazing to me how recalcitrant people are, and they continue to use these illegal means to raise money into Michigan politics. Don't get me wrong, I enjoy the practice of law. I wish I didn't have to do this stuff to enforce the law. But unfortunately, that's where we find ourselves.
All right. All right.
Thank you both for a little advertising.
Yeah, no, that's good. No, it's good stuff. It's the kind of stuff people like to listen to. All right. Going to the close here. As we close this week, it seems like a perfect time to get your very own mugshot mugged. Down your coffee with Donald Trump scowling at you as though you were a New York juror. Just click on the link on our homepage, arepublicpodcast.com.
Just don't let that picture cause you to cough up your coffee. This is Mark Brewer. With that, we'll call it a wrap for this week's podcast. I really appreciate my partnership with Jeff and our wonderful producer, Walt Sorg, that enabled all 3 of us to get together every week and talk about the fascinating business of Michigan politics.
If the Republic is still standing and Donald Trump is awake, we'll be back next week.
A Republic, If You Can Keep It, with Jeff Timmer and Mark Brewer, is a copyrighted production of Michigan Citizens for a Better Tomorrow.